2. North Berwick, Scotland, 1590 AD. It was Ransley's considered opinion that Scotland was awful, and that had been before the witch trials began. He hadn't decided yet if he found it more appalling that the Scottish king believed a coven of witches had conspired to cause his voyage home from Copenhagen to be plagued by storms, or that the populace seemed happy to go along with his delusions. Perhaps associating with demons and fae and vampires had given Ransley a different perspective than the humans he moved amongst. But the whole witch trial thing absolutely stank of cruelty for cruelty's sake. There seemed to be no limit to the sort of torture men were willing to visit on each other, and for no rational reason whatsoever. Yet, here he was, right in the middle of it. Being here wasn't his first choice, or his second, or his 20th. It was, however, the thing that Nigellus and the council had needed him to do at the present time. So he was in Scotland. Heaven help him. The hysterical fear of witchcraft currently scorching its way across Europe like wildfire gave every indication of being a fey gambit, albeit one that had escaped control and taken on a life of its own. At first, the focus of the trials had been limited to people accused of consorting with demons, which made a certain amount of sense in the context of the current war between Hell and the fey realm of Dain. Now, though, any human who showed a hint of natural magic, or independent scientific thought, for that matter, was in danger from the Inquisitors. And God save them if they also happened to be female. The demons had sent Ransley to the arse end of North Berwick because, in this particular instance, a ruling monarch had thrown in his lot with the church on the matter of witchcraft. That was alarming. It was bad enough that religious institutions were using witch trials as a way to purge undesirable opinions and knowledge. Once the secular ruling class realized they had a new tool for killing dissenters with impunity, things in Europe would become 100 times worse. Most of the dozens of unfortunates in North Berwick accused of communing with the devil to inconvenience King James had been taken to Edinburgh for torture. It seemed, though, that witch fever had well and truly taken hold in the seaside town, independent of the king's paranoia. A growing crowd heading north from the central square this morning had piqued Ransley's curiosity enough for him to join them so he could see what was happening. And his fears were confirmed in short order by overheard snippets of conversation.
"They got another one. Come along, Hetty. I want to watch."
"I heard the presbyter order him into the cooking chair. They're taking him to the harbour."
"They say the butcher's boy saw him sacrificing chickens under the full moon. He was pretending to be a travelling minister."
Whoever this poor sod was, it seemed likely he was about to have a very bad day. Probably his last day, come to that. The thing about witch trials, whether officially sanctioned or not, was that you either confessed to witchcraft under torture and were horrifically executed, or you failed to confess, and the torture eventually killed you. Supposedly, the difference was that in the former case, you went to hell, and in the latter, you went to heaven, your innocence proven and your name cleared. Ransley couldn't speak to heaven, but hell, the real hell, most certainly didn't work that way. In other words, this trial would be nothing more than cold-blooded murder dressed up as justice. The fact that witch trials had also grown into a sort of spectator sport for the masses was an entirely different level of depraved.
"Says the man following right along with the rest of the crowd," he thought grimly.
But unlike the townsfolk, He was here specifically to observe and report. Witch trials had finally come to Scotland on a large scale, and the demons wanted to know the details. So, Ransley would watch this unfortunate bastard be tortured to death by his fellows, or alternately watch him be coerced into a confession and then burned at the stake. He was, he reflected, becoming sick to the bone of this war. And at the age of 250 years, give or take, he'd only been alive for a small fraction of it. The crowd was chanting excitedly by the time he reached the harbor.
Duncan! Duncan! Duncan!
Echoed around the dock where the mob had gathered. Men, women, and children erupted into cheers, punching the air with glee as a splash reached Ransley's ears. Grim-faced, he edged between tightly packed bodies, wary of using his vampiric gaze to influence the humans under circumstances like these. A mob like this was a powder keg looking for a spark, and that was not a role he was in any hurry to play. He eventually managed to slip through a gap and claim a place at the front of the crowd. From here, he could make out the presbyter's words and get a view of the action. He was confronted with the expected sight of a wooden lever arm hanging over the edge of the dock. Two burly workmen manned the counterweight attached to the other end, their attention on the presbyter in his finery. The long wooden beam tilted downward, disappearing beneath the choppy gray water of the harbor. As Ransley watched, a slow stream of bubbles rose to the surface near the end of the sturdy pole. The presbyter made a theatrical gesture with one hand, and the bored-looking workman pushed the counterweight down. The wooden arm swung up, dragging the cucking chair and its unlucky occupant out of the water. The chair was a heavy iron contraption, dark with rust, its victim caged in place by six curved metal bars that rose from the chair's frame and met at a point above his head. A thick chain at the end of the wooden beam was hooked to the apex, the whole thing looking not unlike an oversized birdcage swinging from a wooden rafter. Ransley took in the construction with a glance before his attention shifted to the occupant, who had emerged from the water dripping and cursing. The man jerked his head briskly back and forth, flinging long golden hair away from his face. Vibrant green eyes shone with angry fire as he glared at the presbyter. A shock of recognition made Ransley blink in surprise. He centered himself, casting his awareness outward, wondering if he was somehow mistaken. There wasn't so much as a whiff of fey magic to be found, and yet he had sensed an intermittent and fleeting fey presence in the town in the days since he'd arrived. That hadn't been surprising. If anything, the fey were likely to be even more interested in North Berwick's witch trials than the demons had been. But the longer Ransley stared at him, the more certain he was that the man currently on trial was, in fact, fey. And a suspiciously familiar fey at that.
"Confess your sins and recant, witch," called the presbyter, his deep voice booming. "Renounce the devil and embrace your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ."
The crowd jeered. The fey snarled, baring white teeth.
"Release me, swine!"
he shouted, with predictable results. The presbyter gestured to the men at the counterweight, and the heavy chair plunged beneath the water's surface. Ransley stared at the scene in consternation. After hearing the fey's voice, there was no question about it. This was the same unseelie agent who'd briefly captured him in Ireland decades ago. How in heaven's name had he ended up here, imprisoned by humans? And why couldn't Ransley sense his magic? The crowd around him jostled and pushed, shouting with glee as the seconds slipped by. The torture continued until a human would doubtless have been on the edge of panic. Finally, the presbyter flicked his hand. The chair rose to the surface, its occupant spluttering and coughing. Sudden realization dawned. Of course. The chair and bars surrounding it were iron. Just as silver weakened vampires, iron interfered with the phase magic. Ransley's erstwhile acquaintance jerked his shoulders violently against some form of restraint, and he became aware that the Unseelie's wrists and ankles were also shackled with iron, the chains looping beneath the chair seat and through the frame reinforcing the legs, respectively. He was well and truly caught, powerless to either free himself or influence the humans with magic. Irony, Ransley reflected philosophically, could be a cruel mistress. There was probably a pun about iron in there somewhere, too, though he doubted anyone here would appreciate it.
Confess to your involvement with the coven of old Kirk Green,
the presbyter cried, pointing an accusatory finger at his dripping victim.
Confess to consorting with demons.
Ransley couldn't contain a snort of dark amusement. Talk about waving a flag before a bull. Indeed, the Fae looked as scandalized as it was possible to look when shackled to a chair with seaweed caught in one's hair.
Consorting with demons, he echoed. How dare you slander me in such a way, you foul piece of stinking offal?
Never let it be said that Fae were cowards, or that they were particularly skilled in the art of personal diplomacy, for that matter. The chair disappeared beneath the choppy waves as angry shouts and catcalls echoed through the crowd. Suffice to say, this was, in fact, going to be more entertaining than Ransley had anticipated, albeit in a morally uncomfortable, gut-twisting kind of way. Had it been a different Fae, he would have had minimal qualms about letting the farce play out to its natural end. The humans might or might not succeed in drowning him, if only temporarily. They almost certainly wouldn't succeed in coercing him into a confession of anything other than the desire to wreak terrible revenge on his tormentors. Right on cue, the chair rose from the harbor.
I will rip your limbs off like tearing the wings off a fly,
snarled the Fae, and promptly plunged into the chilly seawater again. If Ransley had ever wanted to see what a Fae looked like when their cool armor of indifference was stripped away, he was certainly getting his chance now. And frankly, the Unseelie resembled nothing so much as an angry cat that had been thrown in a washtub, hissing and spitting, his green eyes glaring death. In the face of his captive's open defiance, the presbyter dug deep for additional cruelty, ordering the chair brought up just enough for the crown of golden hair to break the surface, bubbles erupting in a plume as the Fae strained to reach the last few inches, only to be plunged deep again without a breath. The crowd at the front began to count off the seconds with relish, those who knew their numbers well enough to do so, at any rate. The presbyter played to them, ordering a longer dunking after each successive exchange of threats and abuse with his Fae victim. After more than a quarter hour of this, the mood of the crowd began shifting, growing nervous. Such a spectacle could only go on for so long before people realized that the alleged witch should have drowned some time ago. It wasn't unavoidably blatant yet. There were undoubtedly humans who could withstand a full minute underwater at a time and survive, for a while at least. That being said, The number of humans who wouldn't have panicked and lost control of their lungs by now was a considerably smaller number. And the Fae was weakening. His head hung forward as he gasped for breath. His voice wheezed as he told the presbyter which sharp objects he could shove into which body cavities. There was also a question regarding what came next. It was fairly clear that the presbyter was angry enough that he would eventually kill the stubborn bugger, even if it took 20 minutes under the water to do it. More importantly, at some point afterward, the humans would take the Fae's body out of its iron cage. When that happened, he wouldn't stay drowned for long. As far as Ransley was aware, it served no one's interest for laypeople to witness the resurrection of an accused witch in broad daylight. That would lead to true hysteria in the human realm, and with good reason. The chair broke the surface in a wave of froth, and Ransley made an executive decision. "Let yourself drown," he called in French, pitching the words to be heard by Fae ears among the mob's cries, hopefully without drawing too much attention from any but the closest humans. "They'll just keep at it otherwise." Dazed green eyes searched the crowd for the source of the words, but the chair plunged down again before the Fae found him. Ransley waited impatiently for the presbyter to decide another taste of air was warranted. It took an ungodly long time. Still in French, he called, "I'll get you away afterward," when the blonde head emerged gasping from the sea. This time, the forest-colored gaze caught on him almost immediately. Ransley thought he read shocked recognition and also uncertainty, both buried beneath growing exhaustion. "On my honor, such as it is," he added, not knowing if his honor held any interest whatsoever for a Fae, even a desperate one. Evidently, it did, somewhat to Ransley's surprise. When the presbyter next gestured for the chair to be raised, the Fae's head lolled back like a broken doll's, his chest jerked weakly, water dribbling from his mouth and nose, lungs full of the sea with no room left for air. Unfocused eyes roved across the area where Ransley was standing, and there was fear in them. Drowning was a primal terror for any creature that breathed air, as Ransley had personal cause to know, whether it could kill you permanently or not.
"Again! Again!" chanted the crowd.
Ransley tried to hide his distaste, though perhaps, in the end, he should count himself lucky that the mob valued the spectacle of a drowning over the spectacle of burning someone at the stake today.
"Do you confess?"
the presbyter demanded, presumably for form's sake, since the Fae wasn't in any shape to reply. Only the sound of weak choking came in answer, as the crowd held its collective breath. An imperious downward-pointed finger sent the chair into the depths. When it came up again, there was no movement from the slumped figure shackled to it. The crowd erupted in cheers.
"Huh?"
said the portly man standing next to Ransley when the clamor had died down a bit.
"Thought that one was a witch for sure."
"Just goes to show, you never can tell," he replied grimly, and started making his way in the direction of the dock. The crowd was already dispersing, making forward progress easier. The workman had already lifted the lever arm and swung it around to settle the chair on the dock's weathered planks. Two local lads were in the process of unlocking the shackles and maneuvering the unresponsive body out of its cage when Ransley arrived. "That's my cousin," he told them.
I'll collect the body and take it to the churchyard for burial, since he's been proven innocent of any wrongdoing.
One of the lads frowned.
Thought he was supposed to be a traveling minister?
That's right, Ransley said agreeably. He was a traveling minister, and also my cousin.
The other lad looked back and forth between them.
You and him don't look like cousins.
He sighed, and flashed the power in his eyes just for an instant.
Our grandfather was an unfaithful cur. Leave it at that.
Right?
Said the skeptical one, as both their faces went blank.
Is there a cart for hire near this dock? Ransley asked, not in any particular hurry to carry this fey bastard over his shoulder for miles.
One of the heavy-set workmen spoke up.
Ask for Duncan, next to the fishmonger stall. He hires out carts.
Thanks,
Ransley told him, before turning back to the dazed lads.
Keep an eye on him for me. I'll be back shortly.
Oh,
and put the shackles back onto his wrists, please. Don't ask why.
Fortunately, Duncan wasn't hard to find, and Ransley returned in a few minutes with a rickety handcart and a thread-worn tarpaulin that stank of mildew. No one had disturbed the body, and it was the work of a few moments to dump the fey into the cart and cover him up. He thanked the lads again, and also the workmen, one of whom awkwardly said,
Sorry for your loss and all. I'm sure he was a good man, really.
Ransley cocked an eyebrow, pointedly ignoring the raging hypocrisy from someone who'd just helped torture a person to death.
Honestly, he said, he's a bit of an ass. I have to say my money was on him burning at the stake.
With that, he hefted the shafts of the cart and wheeled it away. North Berwick wasn't a huge town, for all that it allegedly bred witches by the dozens. Even so, Ransley was cursing under his breath by the time he'd wheeled the juddering handcart past the crush of houses and shops, heading for open countryside. It took well over an hour to find an abandoned barn where they wouldn't be disturbed. And when he finally did find one, the path leading to it was too narrow and overgrown to allow the cart to pass. He took a vicious amount of satisfaction from dumping the fey onto the ground like a sack of waterlogged grain. After hefting the limp form across his shoulders, he set off toward the half-collapsed barn, grumbling under his breath as he did. They were perhaps 20 yards away from the structure when he felt the fey's stomach muscles jerk.
Ugh, not yet,
he muttered urgently, increasing his pace.
Not yet. Not yet.
The body across his shoulders convulsed, and cold liquid poured down the left side of Ransley's jerkin as the fey's stomach and lungs emptied their contents with extreme prejudice.
God damn it,
Ransley said, with feeling. He marched the rest of the way to the gaping door and went inside. After dumping the retching fey onto a pile of moldering hay that had been abandoned to rot along with the building, he grimaced and tugged off the offending piece of clothing, which now smelled of salt water and bile. The fey rolled onto his side, curling into a ball as his stomach and chest continued to jerk. His arms were twisted awkwardly behind him, still shackled with iron. Ransley gave the barn an assessing look, decided there was a large enough patch of bare dirt in the middle that he could start a fire without burning the place down, and went to do so. By the time he had a little blaze going, using some of the many broken boards lying around the structure as fuel, the fey had opened his eyes and was staring at him.
You,
he rasped. Past a throat raw from breathing water.
Hello, Ransley said affably. Been a while, eh? How are you finding Scotland so far? Personally,
I'm not sold on the concept behind haggis. He watched the Fae realize he was shackled, saw his eyes narrow. Ransley blinked at him. Just a precaution, mate. Don't fret.
So, witch trials, eh?
I have to say, I've only ever seen the cucking chair used on women before. He gestured toward the Fae's head, with its golden locks drying into lank tangles. Maybe it's the hair that confused them. The Fae continued to glare at him. Anyway, he went on blithely, no one in the town should think there's anything unusual about your death. I told them you were my cousin and I was taking your body for burial. With that, Ransley drew a thin iron dagger from the sheath hidden in his boot. The Fae's eyes fastened on it, wariness writ large in his bearing.
And will you kill me properly now, bloodsucker?
He asked hoarsely. Surprised, Ransley looked at the knife, then back at the Fae.
No, nothing like that, he said. The way I see it, I still owe you one for Ireland. You're an asshole and no mistake, but you did send the torch-wielding mob away rather than letting them take a scythe to my neck. I figure this makes us even.
He tossed the small blade into another pile of hay, some distance from his prisoner.
I expect you can use the tip of that blade to pick the padlocks on those shackles, he continued. Though you'll forgive me if I prefer to be well away before that happens.
The Fae didn't answer, so Ransley ploughed on.
How in heaven's name did the humans get hold of you anyway? They shouldn't have had a chance against a Fae.
The Unseelie's face screwed up like he'd tasted sour milk.
They took me as I slept. One of them must have knocked me over the head.
Ransley digested that.
Well, if you will go about performing divinations on the entrails of chickens.
The Fae's expression turned scandalized.
The entrails of chickens.
Ransley shrugged, nonchalant.
That's what they were saying about you, anyway.
He tilted his head, assessing.
I hope you didn't have terribly important business in North Berwick. Unless you care to go about the place permanently glamoured, I dare say your continued presence after being publicly drowned during a witch trial would cause considerable alarm.
His captive's features smoothed into a blank mask.
My business is none of yours.
Ransley smiled at him, showing fang.
And quite right, too. Well, good day to you in that case. I was originally going to say that we're even now, but as it turns out, we're not. You owe me a new jerkin.
He tossed the wet and stinking item at the Fae's feet. Until next time. The Fae leveled a solemn green gaze at him.
Until next time,
he echoed. Ransley grinned wider and swirled away in a billow of mist.